Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Divine all blessed peace and love, joy and prosperity. You are now listening live and always in archive at your leisure and convenience to the Divine Friend, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Elagun Oloye Hudu Obeya Bokura, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, universal, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective, understanding that all is indeed a blessing. If you can just see beyond the veil, for it is all just an illusion and a test, and one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. And it is crucial to the very foundation of my understanding, my teaching, my walk, my work along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we are challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth. And it is my personal place of power and understanding. That place from where I begin, the place from where I crystallize and realize all my endeavors, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny. And I alone create and co-create my divine, all-blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe, ashe, elasti, asheo. Today is Thursday, June 22nd, 2017, and I am emanating and vibrating with you and for you live, virtually, verbally, cosmically, quantum, universally, from this working temple of the House of the Divine Prince, High Potions, Hoodoo Central, in this legendary, historic, beautiful, and most enchanted city in America, New Orleans, Louisiana, the land of my ancestors and those who came before me along this spiritualist Obeah life path and journey, passing down the great Obeah stick along with the knowledge of the healing, life-giving herbs, roots, plants, ritual spirits, and minerals. I appreciate you. I am grateful for you tuning in each and every day at high noon U.S. Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio, U.S. Central Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. My live listening and calling number is area code 347-215-8967. Again, 347-215-8967. This number only works at high noon every day when I'm broadcasting live on air. My call-in number is not active when you are listening to the show in archive. Also, please be mindful I do not do live readings here on the show. My website, where I can be reached utilizing various means virtually 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, operating in 360 degrees of power and understanding, is www.houseofthedivineprince.com, www.houseofthedivineprince.com. I do accept questions, comments, requests, appointments by way of my email at divineprince@houseofthedivineprince.com. Today is a powerful day. Today is a special day. There are many things in the spirit realm that are colliding today, if you will. We are now going into our new moon, a super new moon on tomorrow at 9:30 p.m., June 23rd, 2017. We are also now crossing into the summer solstice, which I believe technically became active on yesterday. And summer solstice tends to sort of spread itself out, if you will, between the 21st, the 22nd, the 23rd, particularly as it relates to the amount of sun and sunlight that we receive during summer solstice. So today, in spite of the storms and the tropical weather that is passing over Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, and going northeast right now, this would be one of the brightest days of sunlight here in the American South, based on the summer solstice day. I have a few things that I want to talk about today. I want to acknowledge Juneteenth, which was June 19th. And many of you who've been listening to me regularly know now that I don't acknowledge Juneteenth necessarily. I do acknowledge San Milo, Maroons, and the Manila Men in Louisiana. As readers no doubt have noticed, I'm continually amazed by the capacity of New Orleans to hold secrets. The word secret might be misleading. Maybe even my own usage of the word secret, hoodoo, New Orleans voodoo secrets and recipes, can be misleading, as most events that have become shrouded in either legend or neglect were, of course, well known to the active participants in this culture. That would have been true in the past, but it is even more so true today. But the feeling of discovery in each new inquiry remains true. This feeling of having many stones yet to be unturned is palpable in dense, cosmopolitan New Orleans, Louisiana. But it also carries over into the surrounding rural areas, marshes and swamps, the bayous, perhaps especially the bayous and marshes, with a vast maze of waterways still mostly uninhabited in the present. It is easy, at least for me, to let my imagination run with the accounts and myths of pirates and explorers, Indians, and most importantly, Maroons. While there is no shortage of legends, the purpose of this is to highlight two groups of people who eked out a living in this wilderness under the threatening cloak of slavery. And both, I hope you will find this feeling of being let into something little known, little understood. Again, the secret, if you will, that still remain here in this city of New Orleans. The vast wilderness of Louisiana, along with the chronically underfunded and undermanned nature of the French colonial government and the quickly growing slave population, created surprising differences in one important aspect of the institution of slavery, and that is maroonage. And many, particularly African Americans, erroneously assume that maroon culture only exists in Jamaica, only exists in the Caribbean, only exists in Brazil, if you will. But maroonage culture truly existed and is documented here in the U.S. and particularly in Louisiana. All New World slave societies grappled with, attempted to prevent, and feared the prospect of runaway slave communities. But in Louisiana, the labyrinth of back swamps made escape much easier than recapture. In his 2012 book, The Accidental City, Lawrence N. Powell notes that among smaller slaveholders, the practice of petite maroonage was widely tolerated for practical reasons. In petite maroonage, slaves would leave the plantation they were bound to during slack time for an indiscriminate amount of time. While gone, they might have visited relatives or initiated relationships at other plantations, worked for hire under false pretenses, or worked in one of the temporary lumber or fishing camps operated by mobile bands of fellow runaways or maroons. While petite maroons would consistently return to their owners in time for replanting or harvest, the voluntary return of slaves was one important reason why short periods of absence were overlooked. Grand maroonage was what slave owners feared the most. The gathering difference between grand or large and petite or small maroonage is that Grants had no plans on returning. Fortunately for them, the demands of the growing colony created niches for them to make a living, even as fugitives. Sawmills in particular were notable for overlooking the fugitive status of their suppliers. Trade was also consistently carried on between maroon communities and slaves living on the plantation, including trade in food, game, and firearms. The known existence of these, albeit clandestine, maroon communities on the edges of Louisiana's plantation society kept certain pressures on the slave owners. The first was the near constant fear of losing slaves to grand maroonage, or worse, the open rebellion of slaves inspired by maroons to be free. The slaves knew this too, and were sometimes able to use this knowledge as a bargaining device in asking their owners for allowances, including travel privileges, additional garden space, and other supplies. And I'm going to stop momentarily to remind you that to some degree, Congo Square would have functioned sort of like a maroonish meeting ground. Slaves were not fed on Sundays, so they were allowed to gather in Congo Square where they could build plants, gardens of fruit, produce that they could share, trade. And you've heard me say before, this is where the culture of vending, street vending, praline vendors, watermelon vendors began here in the South, but New Orleans specifically. So not only did we drum bambula and dance kalinda and reminisce about our ethnic, cultural, African background in Congo Square, this would have also been an intersecting point, a crossroad, if you will, where some of these petite maroonage members would have gathered to meet their families, to swap, trade supplies, gather food sources, and then take them back out to these encampments hidden out in the bayous and the swamps. Little is known of Juan San Milo. Juan San Milo in Spanish. John Saint Milo in French, before he became the leader of a band of escaped slaves sometime after 1768. Now, I'm going to skip to the end quickly so that this makes sense to you. I don't acknowledge Juneteenth on the 19th for many obvious reasons. The political reasons, what happened in Texas and how they got the word late. But I also don't acknowledge Juneteenth because this was the date that Juan St. Milo was decapitated, beheaded in Jackson Square for being this grand maroon leader. We do not know that St. Milo was last owned by, I'm sorry, we do know that St. Milo was last owned by Carl Friedrich de Aschenberg, a Swiss-born colonial official along the German coast of the Mississippi River, who was exiled by Spanish governor Alejandro O'Reilly. And for those of you who are following DNA right now, who've gotten your DNA done, who have been finding the Scandinavian gene pool in your test, we're talking about the Swiss. And this governor, owner, Carl Friedrich the Aschenberg, was a Swiss-born colonial officer who then lived in what became a German community. Those of you who are familiar with the city layout, we have Uptown, and you hear Irish Channel. There's also a large area of that Uptown community that was German. And it shows up in the styling of the houses, the way things were built in those areas of Uptown New Orleans. So this Swiss-born Scandinavian energy is present, unfortunately, in many of our DNA genetic backgrounds, based on this sort of gumbo mix of cultures and ethnicities here in the city of New Orleans. The name Milo has been ascribed several meanings, from the name of a French port to the Spanish bad word bad, to historian Gwendolyn Midlo Hall's plausible and interesting explanation that Milo was a word of Bambara, West African origin, meaning shame, or one whose actions bring shame to others. Juan San Milo's band of Maroons became famous between 1773 and 1784, when it began to clash with outsiders. At that time, while San Milo apparently continued to visit the back swamps of the German coast, he claimed the land from the Rigolets to the Ville Giolarde, the land between Lake Bourne and the Mississippi River, as well as the south shore of Lake Bourne as his sovereign territory, forbidding any and all whites from entry. In 1782, San Milo's band killed two Americans near Bay St. Louis. Many of you are familiar with Bay St. Louis. It was mentioned many times during Hurricane Katrina. One of our favorite morning newscast anchors. Oh, wow, I just drew a blank. Robin Robertson, that's her name, Robin Robertson, as well as her sister, who is a newscaster here in the city of New Orleans, are from Bay St. Louis. The Americans, in addition to trespassing on Spanish territory, had run afoul of St. Milo, but not only entering his territory, but also attempting to kidnap some Maroons for slave sale, as runaway slaves. Four English trespassers met this same fate. An Indian trade summit called away Governor Esteban Miro in the spring of 1784, leaving as acting governor Francisco Bullany, a militia commander and large slave owner who had been frustrated by the Cabildo's lack of enthusiasm when it came to capturing these Maroon slaves in the Badu Flore downriver areas. Since at least 1776, this was an ongoing issue for the white establishment. When information about the location of San Milo's band of Maroons reached Bullinet by way of the network of plantation slaves, Bullinet ordered the first expedition to capture San Milo at Ville Gillard. The first attack was successful in capturing some of San Milo's camp, but San Milo took the opportunity to counterattack, capturing some of, recapturing all but one of the prisoners that had been captured during this attack. A second expedition based on intelligence gathered from a spy within St. Milo's band was successful in locating and capturing St. Milo, along with 40 to 60 Maroons. Some of the Maroons in St. Milo's band were able to escape and either remained in the Bade Fluvere, I'm trying to speak French, y'all, or relocated to the Barataria. And again, this will be the downriver area, which we now sort of associated with East New Orleans and those areas close to the riverbank. San Milo was tried at the Cabildo and was quickly convicted and hung in front of the St. Louis Cathedral in Jackson Square, which is why every year we acknowledge St. Milo on Juneteenth, not the emancipation of slaves. We also perform our ritual ceremonies quite often in that space in Jackson Square and between Jackson Square and the river, also for the same reasoning. The other capture of the Maroons, while their lives were technically spared, were submitted to tortures, including lashings and branding, which bordered on the edge of human endurance. Cases of both Petite and Grand Maroonage no doubt continued in Louisiana, even though changes in the institution of slavery slowly implemented after the state joined the United States. But never again was there a band of runaway slaves at large, as notorious or as defiant as St. Milo. Remnants of St. Milo's extensive territory can be found in the places named as St. Milo, Maroon Lake, Bayou Maroon, and Bayou St. Milo in St. Bernard Parish. Another reason I wanted to talk about this today is because we live in a revolutionary time as it relates to APR, African-based traditional religious systems, and the growing interest in that, but also from a Western perspective, this sort of new world order of things. I'm my own God, I'm my own goddess, I make my own rules, I do what I want, I do it as I will. And I'm not necessarily in challenge with that mindset. Just don't call it ATR. Just don't call it African. Don't perpetrate it as Fa or Ifa or Voodoo. I had a brother whom I thought was a friendly brother on Facebook today, basically suggest to me that he was intentionally misrepresenting Ifa online. And what I mean that by that is some of you are posting Orisha. Some of you are even suggesting Orisha dates that don't match the authentic practice of this religion. I'm also, as many of you already know, worked up by this Black Witch paganism movement. You have basically embraced Eurocentric culture and practice, and you're trying to put a Black face on it. Maya Angelou once said, when people tell you who they are, listen. When people tell you they are a fool, listen. When people tell you they don't care about rules, customs, traditions as it relates to how these practices are operated, Ifa, Fine, Akan, Santeria, Lakomi, Palo, when people tell you they don't want to know the truth, they don't want to follow the rules, they are telling you they are a fool and you should listen. You should flee. But the pervading attitude of today is, I can do what I want. I can do it the way that I want. And you are now misleading, misrepresenting, defrauding out the community. You're also creating an environment where ATR will either be washed away or wiped out if it is not completely appropriated by European culture. And some of you brothers and sisters, Black brothers and sisters, you are responsible for partaking in the migration of our culture and tradition, in this theft of our culture and tradition. But even worse, in my opinion, is the eroding away of faith, understanding that many of you are seeking in these traditions. You feel put out by the church. If not, you turned your back on the church, as I have and as many have. But I did not seek to rewrite the lessons. I did not seek to rewrite ATR. I did not seek to bastardize these traditions. I put in 40 years of study, exploration into these traditions, so that I can bring them back to our people African Americans here in the U.S. who cannot afford the financial responsibilities or the political responsibilities often associated with going to West Africa, Haiti, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Panama, Brazil, seeking that which is divinely innate and inherent within us. It doesn't mean that we ignore the rules. It doesn't mean we create our own rules. It doesn't mean that we set ourselves up as fraudulent leaders of these traditions. And let me be clear, they are feeding off the ignorance of those of you who they know will not pick up a book, will not study, will not seek out a leader, a mentor within these traditions to teach you, to carry you forward into these practices. So they are singling you out in particular, because see, they're not coming for me. They're not even hurting my clientele, because by the time the clients get to me, they're looking for authentic practice. They're already burnt out on fraudulent activities. They're already burnt out on your ego posts. They're already burnt out on your vanity and your foolishness by the time they get to me. And I've said it before, as much as I don't like it, it's only beneficial to the authentic practitioner. Because by the time these people are worn out, tired, in some cases broke, if they are truly seeking ATR, they're going to come to us. The rest of you, I don't worry about battling. Half of you are going to end up in jail on fraud charges. One of you is headed there now. And due to your own ignorance, you got me deeply involved in it because your client came to me. And then the rest of you are going to whittle away, evaporate, and then recreate yourself into the next movement. Many of you have been online as long as I have. I came online 2005 as a direct result of Hurricane Katrina. Nobody was interested in voodoo then. Nobody was interested in Orisha then. You all were obsessed with Dr. York then, comedic science then, Nuwapu and Nuwabubu then. And then you moved to Hebrew Israelite. And now you're coming for Orisha and Loa, but you found that it was too many provisions put in place to prevent the bastardization of these traditions. And some of you couldn't afford to get in, weren't willing to do the homework to get in. And so now you've moved on to this Black Pagan thing, which is European at its very foundation, even in blackface. But it's also an opportunity for you all to sort of do what you want, say what you want, create what you want. And again, I don't have a problem with that. Just don't call it ATR. It's not African. It's not Ifa. It's not voodoo. So don't play around with it like that. Don't bastardize it like that. You put yourself in a position just like the oppressor, just like the slave master, to bastardize our traditions for your own purposes. And the fact that you're Black and brown and blue doesn't matter to me. And it certainly doesn't matter to the Most High. You all will pay for your actions. You all will pay for these deliberate attempts to mislead and misrepresent. And you're misleading and misrepresenting the very Black people that you say you stand up for, that you say you are a part of. Now, I read a post today, another one of my beloved brothers, said he's given up on Black consciousness. And I totally, totally understand that. Too much foolishness in Black consciousness, too much self-hate in Black consciousness, Too many black folks calling other black folks niggas and coons in black consciousness. Too many folks in black consciousness that are riding on ego while you try and find your next sex partner and are not operating on a foundation of any kind of knowledge, any kind of truth at all. And that's okay with many of you. That's okay. And I say it's okay with you because you support it, you click like on it, you reshare it, and some of you are even foolish enough to throw your money at it. And then you end up right back where you began, looking for the next practitioner who you think is going to allow you to throw money at it, as opposed to get down and do the work. My godchildren do work. My clients do work. Some of my clients know more about ATR than many of you self-proclaimed leaders and titled people in these traditions, because I require the work. I require it. And I am now moving into a time where it's going to be contractual. I'm actually drawing up contractual agreements with my clients and my godchildren so as not to continue this pattern of leaping from one house to the next, one practitioner to the next, one lie to the next, and then getting on Facebook and social media and dogging out all ATR because your shortcut in didn't work. Your trickery in didn't allow you access to what you thought you were going to have access to. And many of you just want your man back, your woman back. You want to hit the lotto. You want some kind of quick overnight success, of which Oludamare is not going to give anyway, just so that you can throw that money back to the oppressor, which is what many of you are going to do. You're going to buy a shiny car. You're going to move into a whiter neighborhood. You're going to buy your label and designer clothing. And then you're going to get on Facebook posting black and red, white and red, you know, yellow, blue and white, and then claim you're operating in ATR. Those days are numbered. Remember, I said it here at 12:37 p.m., June 22nd, 2017. Those days are numbered. And the abuses of the ancestors, the abuses of ATR will not continue in the way that they are manifesting right now. There is a move, if you will, a torrential storm on its way to wash away, cleanse, purify the foolishness that is representing ATR today. I don't care who you are. I don't care where in the country you live. If you're masquerading under these African-based traditional systems, your time and your day of doing so are numbered. I'll be back tomorrow at high noon U.S. Central Standard Time. We will move forward with this topic. All is truly and indeed a blessing. Ashe.
Congo Square. The Omus Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. A sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. The Omus Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. And as the colonizers came, our host, the Omus Indians, they pushed aside our host. The colonizers came and pushed aside our host and introduced us in chains. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Les Places de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies worked is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to stay ourselves, save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang, we beat, we be, we was and is. Hail Congo Square, Congo, Congo Square. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us. Inside the beat of us. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us until we are ready to release them into a world that we recreate. A world heralded by the beat. Be, beat, being, beating, being of black heart drums. Heart, beat. Heart, beat. Heart, be at this place. At this place, be heart, beat, be we. Beating place in new world space. Beating, being in place in new world, preserving our ancient pace. Our dance is the God walk, our music the God talk. First thing we do, let's get together, circle ourselves into community. No beginning, no end, connected together and singing, ringing, singing in a ring. Second, let's be original, aboriginal. Be what we were before we became what we are. Be Bambula dance, be Banza music, and sing song words which have no English translation. Third, let us remember. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. Let us remember never to forget. Even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. The bounce, the blood flow, the feel, the spirit grow, energy must retain and pass on the essential usness that others want to dissipate with out of us. Whoa! But no matter, no matter how much of us they prohibit, no matter how much of us they prohibit, deep inside us is us. Deep inside us is us. Remains us.